On this week's episode of Video Culture, we'll tackle TV and radio in movie comedies, the beloved UHF and Airheads. On this week's Video Culture.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the Video Culture Podcast. I'm Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And we have a delightful and funny and just upright silly episode today, episode number 6. And we just have two just wonderful movies picked out today.
Yeah, we decided after, you know, The Fly and Event Horizon and then, you know, The Razor's Edge and all that from the weeks before, it was time to you know, get back to having just a little bit of fun with this.
Yeah, I mean, movies are enjoyable and we learn a lot about life. But we also want to enjoy it along the way and enjoy its just absurdity and silliness. And so the two movies that we had picked out today are the movie Airheads from 1994 and UHF, which everybody should know as a Weird Al Yankovic movie from 1989.
Both of them minor classics in their own right, if you ask me.
I mean, I definitely agree. I mean, I liked both movies. They're both quite enjoyable and for quite different reasons. But we'll get into that. First off, let's go over the quick sort of plot rundown of Airheads. So you have three guys who are in a, you know, rock band. And like this is like a rock band. Kind of like, you know, like almost what you would call... You wouldn't even call it heavy metal back in the day, but it was more.
I think they used the word power slop to describe themselves.
Power slop. Yeah. I mean, they were kind of Motley Crue-ish, kind of.
Or if you've like ever heard the band Corrosion of Conformity, it's kind of like it's not quite hair metal. It's a little more, you know, masculine than hair metal,
right?
But it's not quite heavy metal,
right? Yeah, exactly. It's definitely commercially sort of acceptable hard rock. I guess you would call it. So anyway, they plot to try to get their song played on the popular radio station. And then, Brendan Fraser, who plays the lead singer, named Chaz, he tries to break into the office of Judd Nelson, who plays Jimmy Wing, who is like a label executive, record label executive. Yeah. Thank you.
Basically, they just want to break into the music business. They've got this band. They're a power trio, and they just want to be heard.
Right.
And they're having trouble with that.
So they wound up breaking into a radio station to try to get their song, you know, played on the air, and that would create buzz about them, and then that would have, you know, like bigger shows and stuff like that. Yeah. Like they weren't really looking for. I mean, he was looking to get signed and get a deal, but he was just looking to see if he can get his radio station played on the air.
Yeah,
they had these like water pistols, like these Uzis that were water guns, but they looked too real. So and then they wound up just kind of, you know, pointing their guns at the guys in the radio station who wouldn't play their song, and then wound up taking them hostage, and then, like, just hilarity ensues as they take the whole radio station hostage.
Yeah, basically, it's an accidental hostage situation,
which I still don't quite understand that concept of accidental hostage, but that's okay.
Well, that was not their intention when they went in there.
Right, right.
But it's farcical. It's a little bit Three Stooge-like. You know, it's silly. It's broad. But it's, you know, this movie's got a great cast. It's got Brendan Fraser at the height of his career. Right. It's got a emerging Adam Sandler in a tertiary role. Like he's actually the third build in this movie.
Yeah, he plays the really kind of dumb guy.
Yeah,
the dumb jock, you know, pool cleaner, who's the drummer. Right, is always like, I don't know why in these movies the drummer always gets to be the dumb guy. But anyway. And then
I'd like to point out, ladies and gentlemen, that Ryan is a drummer, so that's why he had to make that little aside just to provide context for the podcast.
Anyway, the Steve Buscemi plays the bass player, who looks he looks young in this movie compared to movies that we've seen him in now. Yeah. But I mean, almost he looks a little bit older than the other guys in the movie. Yeah, but you get the idea that he's the older brother of Pip, of the drummer.
Adam Sandler's character, Pip, yeah. Yeah, Steve Buscemi, who, again, while he does look older than the other two, is very young. This had to be, like, right after Reservoir Dogs. I mean, this was his first big Hollywood movie after he broke out.
Right. Then you have, in the radio station, you have Joe Mantegna as the main, like, DJ guy. Yeah. Michael McKean plays like the radio station manager
of the very great rock and roll movie Spinal Tap.
And he plays like a kind of a wimp, you know, rich guy in this movie.
He plays a guy with a ponytail and a shitty gold chain. Yeah.
That's a fake ponytail.
Yeah.
Anyway. Also Ernie Hudson plays the lead like negotiator cop with the hostages.
Yeah.
Chris Farley plays a cop as well.
Mm-hmm. And also, speaking of cops, there's a cameoing Alan Covert in it, and Alan Covert is in most of Adam Sandler's movies. He's the lead actor in Grandma's Boy, and he plays a side character in Big Daddy, and really most of Sandler's like sillier comedies, Alan Covert plays a part in. He's also the best friend in The Wedding Singer.
Right.
And like I said, he is the main character in Grandma's Boy. He's in like 5 minutes of this as one of the cops. I think it's an early example of Sandler getting his buddies into his movies.
This also has a very young David Arquette, who plays one of the other like DJs.
Yeah, very young David Arquette.
Right, and very minor role. He wasn't really even sort of involved in the plot. Yeah. But
he's sort of a dumb surfer kind of guy.
Harold Ramis plays like he's in a bit part kind of, and plays a fake negotiator, basically, or a fake, I should say. He plays a fake record executive to try to get them.
Yeah, he was actually a cop in disguise, basically, trying to convince them. And has this great little exchange where they find out he's a cop, asking him questions like, which side did you take in the David Lee Roth Van Halen split up? You know, and when he says Van Halen, they're like, oh, you're a cop. Get out of here. Yeah.
Oh, but the other question was better.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite quotes out of all movies ever. He goes, who would win in a wrestling match, Lemmy or God? And he goes, Lemmy. He goes, wrong. He's like, God. And he's like, no, fool, trick question. Lemmy is God. And, you know, Lemmy is in the crowd scene.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, Lemmy, he says that, you know, he, like, what is it? Was the school editor of the school newspaper or something like that?
Yeah, I was
that.
The editor of my school newspaper. Yeah.
And, and actually his song is in the opening sequence. Mm-hmm. Like, you can hear him singing. I was like, listening, I was like, is that Libby?
Yeah, it's Born to Raise Hell. We have a band by Motorhead,
Well, it's actually from my notes, right? It's like the first thing I have in my notes. It's actually Motorhead, Ice-T, and a guy named Whitfield Crane, which you should know. Well, I don't know. You probably don't know. A lot of people didn't know, because I know I didn't. He's the founder of the band Ugly Kid Joe.
I should know that, because I'm of the right age to know that. I'm an old man.
But no, I mean, who knows that? Who knows what, you know, who knows what, like, Bono's real name is and all that crap? Like,
you're saying it's not Bono?
Anyway, let's not talk about that. So, let's go. But really, the movie is, I think, captures the sort of, like, 1990s MTV scene, like, of the music, like, sort of world and that sort of thing, like and even has like 90s references in it, like Rodney King and like
Yeah, oh, that's one of my favorite jokes in the entire movie. Actually, is the Rodney King joke. At one point, when they're in the hostage situation, they're getting the entire crowd to chant, and Steve Buscemi starts chanting Rodney King, Rodney King, oh. and Adam Sandler is back with the hostage, and one of the hostages is a black man. He's like, are they chanting Rodney King? And Sandler's like, yeah, he's that guy,
right?
And that's all they say about it. Like, no context. He's just that guy.
Yeah, I mean, the whole plot sort of hinges on this idea that, like, they have they brought, like, a reel-to-reel tape.
Yeah, of their demo.
Right, and the radio station, I mean, they're all, like, digital now. They have, like, CDs and stuff, and so they're like, we don't have a reel-to-reel analog tape machine. Well,
let me just find our phonograph and we'll play your record right now.
So they have to try to find another copy of it, so they're trying to contact the on-again, off-again girlfriend of Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, Chaz's abusive girlfriend who, like, seriously, like, wails on him in this movie.
It's like spousal abuse, man. This is like, she's, like, slapping him around.
At one point, she headbutts him.
Right! Headbutts him right in, like, the bridge of his nose.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, this is domestic abuse.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not even really all that funny. It's just like, oh, I just felt bad for him.
I know. And then she, like, dumps everything that he has, like, all the CDs, like, out in the street. Yeah. It's just like, man, this is wild. But he, like, still loves her and all this stuff.
Well, she is a very attractive lady.
Well, the lady that we are talking about is Amy Locane, who plays Kyla. Now, to me, Amy is like this dead ringer for Christina Applegate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw the first time I saw her in the movie, I'm like, wait a second, is Christina Applegate in this movie? And it was like, no, it's some other girl that looks just like her.
Yeah. Well, she definitely has that 1990s Kelly Bundy thing going on for sure. Right. Yeah.
I was expecting her to have a choker.
Yeah, that was the thing in the 90s. Yeah, all girls who had, like, the straight blonde hair had the black choker. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was half expecting her to have one. But, I mean, I guess she wasn't as, like, that goth. Like, she was supposed to be more sort of, like, sultry or whatever. So, anyway.
Well, not to switch from really attractive women over to something that's on the other spectrum of that, but did we mention that the great Chris Farley's in this?
Oh, I mentioned that. Yeah, we mentioned Grace. I mean, yeah, this was... you know, a lot of Saturday Night Live characters in the movie. But I mean, the whole thing sort of like kind of keeps you going because you're just like, you kind of get on the side of the band going, if they just really heard this song, you know, they would, you know, everybody would just like love them and they have a crowd and now they have an audience and now they have a buzz. Yeah. And even you see Jimmy Wing, you know, who just brushed off, you know, Chaz before. Yeah. And then now he's like, oh, no, these guys got some buzz. Like, we need to sign these guys now. So they actually have some clout now.
Yeah.
And you really want them to, like, sort of win. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking the whole time going, they've got to get out of this hostage situation. How are they going
to
get out?
Like, you don't want anything bad to happen to them. They're very likable. And I think that's why the movie works so well, is that they cast these three very likable actors. They made them very likable characters because they just want to be heard. I mean, we've all had creative endeavors where we just wanted to be given a chance. I mean, you're a musician. I'm a writer and an artist. We're all at the point where we just want to put people to look at our work and, you know, evaluate it fairly. And it's hard to find someone to do that. It's hard to get a break.
Well, so, I mean, I've been in a band. Yeah. I've been in this situation. Me and my other bandmates did do this at one time. We didn't take the radio station hostage, and we knew who the DJ was, but we definitely took our demo, like, down there to try to get played on the local show.
Yeah.
You know? And, I mean, I grew up, like, in a radio station. My dad was in radio and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's just like, when I first saw it, I'm like, it just sucked me in right away. I mean, this was just like everything I love, you know, rock music and then, like, radio station and then, you know. And that's what made it, like, so fun.
Yeah. We all have things that make us predisposed to, like, a movie. And this one tickles a lot of those for me. I love stories about artists who are struggling but stay pure to who they are. I love movies about really decent characters so you can really root for them. And I love slapsticky comedy. I love, like, that kind of Three Stooges sort of goofy comedy. Right. And this movie has all that. Plus, it's based on the 90s, which is the time period you and I grew up in.
Right.
So, it's really...
1994, just to age myself, people. I graduated high school in 1994, so class of 94. So, this is like perfect. This is like my target age. Yeah. I mean, and talking about MTV, I mean, Kurt Loder plays a cameo in it as himself, yeah. You know?
And weirdly, Beavis and Butthead called a radio station at one point.
Mike Judge.
Yeah, which in now in 2018 is a little strange, but
right.
But still, it was a neat little, it adds to the nostalgia bomb of this movie if you're a 90s kid.
Man, if you saw that in a theater, you were laughing out loud at that scene, you know, where they called in and it's like Beavis, and you're like, oh my gosh, they're bringing in something else. It's almost like as if this movie was produced by MTV.
Yes.
You know?
It definitely has that vibe. Because, I mean, the MTV did make some films. I don't think they ever made any movie that was as good as Airheads. Because, again, I think Airheads is a really legitimately fun, good movie. It's very light. It's very breezy. But it's super fun. And, you know, it's got, you know, lots of good performances. It's got Michael Richards in there, you know, twitching and squirming around doing his Michael Richards thing.
That's really a lot of what Michael Richards is good for. I mean, he's very that slapstick kind of like bundle of nervous energy kind of character.
He's sort of like John McClane in Die Hard in this movie. He's climbing through the air ducts with like a lighter.
Yes. I thought, what is he doing a bit? And then they give him a gun.
Yeah.
Like they have to sneak him a gun.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's like holding people up like from the air duct, you know? It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, and I don't know if you mentioned this, but another one of my favorite jokes in the entire movie, and it's a joke that's it's even in the trailer, but the name of the band is the Lone Rangers.
Oh, yeah, the Lone Rangers, plural.
And every time anyone hears it, they're like, what? You can't pluralize Lone Ranger. And they're like, why not? It's like, well, there's three of you. You're not exactly alone, are you? And again, it's such a perfect like Three Stooges moment because they're all like, I don't get what you're saying. What do you mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was cast very well. Is there anything that you didn't like about the movie?
You know, actually, I mean, no, it's shaggy. I mean, it's not a very tight movie, but I mean, it's such a fun, like, hangout movie. Like, I put it on and I smiled and laughed through the entire thing. I legitimately really like this movie. I mean, it's not anything I could say is an amazing piece of artwork that should be revered.
Right.
But I think it's a minor classic of that time period.
There's really only a couple of scenes I didn't like or I didn't really care for.
Okay, well, let's see.
All right, so the first one was the one that we already talked about where where Kyla, like, headbutts Chaz and like really abuses him, and you're like,
yeah, she throws like a box at him and hits him and
like for no reason. It's just like they were sitting on the couch like cuddling, and then she just like snaps.
Yeah,
and
like if this made nowadays, they'd call her bipolar, and she'd be getting help. Right. And she throws a chair through a window at one point.
Well, that was the scene. That's the other scene I'm talking about.
Okay,
it wasn't really the chair through the window that really threw me off because I was just like, "Well, that's her character. That's what they wrote."
Yeah.
But then it like the console, the audio console, starts like smoking, and you're like, "I mean, I know electronics. I mean, I know I'm a nerdy guy, and I know electronics, and I grew up in a I worked at a radio station when I was really young. My dad was there." There's no situation where glass can enter into a console and it starts blowing up like that.
There you are, ladies and gentlemen. Ryan is calling bullshit on the science of Airheads. No.
Yes. It's absolute crap. But, I mean, they had to do it for the plot because it was just like they finally had the tape and then they had to create something else because they already had a scene where this old, like, reel-to-reel tape recorder kind of, like, ate the reel-to-reel.
Yeah.
So, I would have think that, you know, maybe they could have come up with something a little bit different. You know, maybe they could have, you know.
It's a little bit lazy, sure.
Yeah, it is a little bit lazy. Because really, eating the tape would have been more of what I would have gone for and then done something else with the reel-to-reel.
Yeah.
Because everybody's had that experience from our generation and from a tape getting, you know, eat up by the tape machine.
I don't know. Were reel-to-reel tapes common in 1994? Like, I don't remember them being a really thing.
I mean, I was in radio in 1994. That's when I worked, right? I mean, my tenure, like, working at a radio station was from about 1991 to about 1996 or 97 We still used reel-to-reel tape machine that whole time.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, and we were, like, the station that I worked for was, like, the biggest station, the number one station in Knoxville. So, we still had, they still had, you know, reel-to-reel, you know, and they would have had one laying around. They would have had, you know, something, especially a big station like KPPX, which had, like, you know, door lock security and all this kind of stuff, like key security. Like, we didn't have key security, you know, back then. You know, I didn't even have a key to the radio station, you know? So it was just kind of, it was one of those things. I just thought it was, like I said, it's just a, it, but really, and to be quite honest, it's just kind of a minor technical point just because I know that sort of like world and I know. Like, a console's not going to blow up by some glass shards.
Oh, no. I mean, and I think that's part of the fun of this is being able to talk about, bring our areas of expertise to it. I mean, because, yeah, I mean, even I'm watching, thinking, I don't think it would smoke like that and spark like that. I could see it getting bashed and not working. But it is, like, very cinematic, like, smoke puff and stuff like that.
Yeah, and just like when he says, like, when he's saying turn it up, if you're too loud or too old, and he's, like, grabbing all the faders. Yeah. And I'm like, no, if you're playing a song, it's only going to be on one fader. It's not going to be on all of them.
But it looks cool.
It does. It adds, you know, sort of like cinematic effect, you know, because they have to do something.
Speaking of the music, great 90s soundtrack in this film.
It is excellent. It is absolutely excellent. And then when I first, you know, like saw this movie, I'm like, you know what? I know music. This is like up my alley, man. I love this. It's fantastic. So,
yeah.
But we'll get to that in sort of the later stuff on the. I have some information about that.
Very cool. Very cool. About that. I can't wait.
All right, so we'll move on to talk about UHF.
Oh, now you're talking about, and this is not even just a. I misspoke. This is not a minor classic. I think this movie is a classic. It's so good, in my opinion.
It is. It really is. It is. This is another thing that I think really captures the essence, and it's like being inside the mind of Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes. The kind of man-child, playful, kind of silly mind of Weird Al,
Right. And it's a wild world in there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because the movie has very little narrative structure. It's just like almost vignettes, you know, it's strung together with the barest of plots. But there is a plot, and let's talk about that first.
All right, so the plot is Weird Al and his, well, I mean, he plays a character. We can't really call him Weird Al, but his character name is George Newman, and his buddy, Bob Steckler, who's played by David Bowie, they are like friends working in this burger joint. But, like, he's, like, the character George keeps daydreaming all the time. They both get fired. They've got to find jobs. Well, his uncle has this, his rich uncle has a UHF band, which back in the TV days, which back in the, like, the 80s and 90s, we had VHF, which were all the, like, 2 through 13.
Yeah.
And then you had, like, the UHF, which may have two or three channels in it. And, that, you know, it went from 14 all the way up to like 78 or 80 or something like that.
It was something crazy like that. And they would have like reruns or play old movies or be like public access.
Right. But there would only be like two stations. And a lot of Fox affiliates were like UHF.
Yeah, it started band. As UHF. Yeah.
Yeah, because they couldn't be in the VHF band. They were like in the UHF band. And so, yeah, that's what it is. It's kind of like the AM radio of like TV. Yeah. And so, they take over the station. They're trying to figure out what to do with it. They like George takes over as like the host of the children's show, and he's failing miserably. And he lets this weirdo janitor. He gives up and says, "You know what? I'm done. Here, janitor guy, you be on the show. Yeah. You be on TV."
Stanley Spadowski, who again is played by Michael Richards in all his twitchy glory. But it's even a more broader performance than what he did in Airheads. I mean, he's like this weird, like twitchy, goofy, really walking cartoon character of a person who is kind of childlike and silly. And when he gets to the end of this children's program, he just comes alive and he's just a natural fit for this kind of bright Technicolor children's program. And the show's a hit.
And well, and it's so much of a hit that they start doing other stuff. And he's like, oh, well, I've got all these other ideas for all these other shows. So it's like an outlet for all of his, like, you know, dreamscape or what he's thinking about or what.
And really, and from a practical standpoint, what that means is there's just lots of weird vignettes with Weird Al's weird sense of humor. Like,
well, that's what the movie is. But the plot of the movie is that the station is like the VHF like station manager is trying to take this other, you know, station down, because they realize when the ratings book finally comes out, they realize that this station is number one. So they're trying to, he's trying to do everything to take it down.
Mm-hmm. Trying to buy him out, basically.
Right, yeah, trying to buy him out.
And when George Newman, Weird Al Yankovic's uncle, has gambling debts. So he owes this gangster so much money. He owes him like $75,000 he has to pay in like two weeks.
Right.
So basically, the UHF channel has to come up with $75,000 or the station's going to get sold to the... over to the bigger station, and they're going to basically destroy the UHF station. Right. And it's your typical like scrappy underdogs rallying together to save their station kind of story.
Exactly. And I mean, it's kind of like, but really, I mean, it's just a springboard for the vignettes, for like the sketches. I mean, there really are sort of like sketches of shows that would show you like these small clips, and then it would jump back to the main plot, and then it would, you know,
you had things like Wheel of Fish, where they're playing like a Wheel of Fortune game, but they're spinning a wheel that has fish attached to it, and it's hosted by a guy who runs the karate studio who lives above George Newman's apartment, and his catchphrase is "You so stupid," you know. it's really just the goofiest humor, but it's funny and it works so well. And it's like gags like that. They have fake movie previews for movies that they make for the station, like Conan the Librarian. And my favorite's Gandhi, too.
Right. No, I mean, you start off the movie like in sort of like George's head, where it's like a parody of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, the Raiders of the Lost Ark, to be specific. And instead of grabbing the idol, he's grabbing an Oscar.
An Oscar holding... Not holding their chest, but holding the...
Yeah.
Yeah, if you look close. Anyway.
Yeah. Because it's that kind of movie, ladies and gentlemen.
So, like, holding their crotch, essentially, is what it is. But, yeah, if you go back and look at it, it's not an Oscar. The hands are grabbing in the crotch area.
But it's implied that it's meant to be an Oscar.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, I mean, I was laughing out loud at this movie. I mean, the first scene where he, like, has the bag and, you know, like, where you have the weight of it and then he, like, takes sand out.
Yeah, because he thinks it's too heavy for
like, too heavy. And he's going to, like, put the sand, like, where the idol was so he can take the idol because he doesn't want to trip the, like, the whatever booby trap. So, but he takes out some sand to try to, like, weigh it. And then he just throws the bag to the side and grabs the idol anyway. And you're just like, wow.
Yeah, and the boulder starts chasing him, and they run past like green screens of like Paris and like Italy, and like at one point he rounds a corner, and the ball rounds the corner with him, you know.
Yes, it's like absolutely zany. Yeah. I mean, those kind of things reminded me a lot of like Airplane and stuff like that.
It's very Zucker Brothers. It's very silly, and it's so good natured and goofy, and it's so much fun.
Right.
It is such a fun, silly movie, and. Enough can't be said about how just charming Michael Richards is as Stanley Spadowski. He's such a likable, goofy character.
And we picked these two movies not even realizing. We knew that Michael Richards was in UHF because we both like love this movie, but we had almost like kind of forgotten that like Michael Richards was in Airheads because he plays like just a kind of a minor character.
Yeah.
He's only like in a few scenes. He's in the ductwork. But, I mean, he comes out in, like, one sort of pivotal scene, but then he's just like, go away.
It's really just there so they can get a real gun into the story at some point.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It was, but he plays, I didn't really, I mean, his performance in Airheads was a little kind of goofball-ish.
Yeah.
You know, because he plays, like, an accountant or something like that. But, I mean, it's just like... It's kind of funny, though, how he plays, like, both roles where he's, like, playing the guy trying to save the TV show, and then in the other one, he's trying to take the other guys down.
Yeah, he's trying to break the party up, basically. Yeah. And what's another neat parallel between these two movies is they both kind of end with huge crowd scenes out in front of a station.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's like, oh, wait, he's going to have a whole crowd of people just, like, in, Airheads and stuff. And you're like, where they have to raise money and everything comes together at like the last minute.
Yeah, it's so definitely some visual symmetry there. And but yeah, there's some great parodies. Like there's this amazing part where Stanley and Michael Richards' character gets kidnapped by the bad guys because he's the star of the station. And George, you know, where Yankovic decides he's going to go save him. And as he's going to save him, he fantasizes that he's Rambo in like Rambo First Blood Part 2. And he's like, show Weird Al in this ridiculous muscle suit. And he's got the headband. And he's got the bow and arrow. And it's just this hilarious scene where he's like, all the bad guys are shooting at him. He's just walking slowly forward with his bow and arrow, just casually shooting them with the bow and arrow. And he's doing like the Stallone growl where he has like the curled lip. And it's so funny, man.
Yeah, it's just like when they do like the like Star Wars scenes where the stormtroopers are shooting at, then they're just like standing there.
Yeah.
You know, the stormtroopers are just shooting right by him.
Yeah, it's very much like Spaceballs in a way. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. But see, that was another dream sequence.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but what's funny is that when me and my wife were watching it, there's that scene where the Stanley Spadowski gets like kidnapped. And then he tries to, like, break himself free.
Yeah.
And he's, like, then there's that whole, like, sequence, like, where he's, like, beating the guys up with a rod or something
that.
Oh,
yeah, no, his mop.
His mop. He sees his mop, and, like, all of a sudden he has this, big rush of adrenaline.
Let's go back for a second. Earlier in the movie, he's the janitor at the evil TV station. And he gets fired by the mean boss. And the mean boss takes Stanley's mop, because Stanley's a simple man who loves being a janitor, and he loves his mop.
He's had that mop since he was a child.
Yes, and it's actually kind of emotional. You really feel bad for him.
Right.
And so at the end, when they have him kidnapped and tied up, he sees his beloved mop that he lost at the beginning of the movie, and he goes into like Superman badass mode, breaks free, and basically kicks their butts with the mop. You know,
But the fight scenes are so terrible.
Yeah.
My wife said, you know, because like, all he does is like kind of half swing at a guy, and the guy jumps like 4 feet backwards onto some like empty boxes or whatever.
Yeah.
And my wife looks at me and she goes, "Is this like a dream sequence?" And I said, "No, they're dream sequences, but I think this part is real." Yeah.
Because apparently Stanley Spadowski is a bad man.
Right. You don't mess with his mop.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, there's a part of the end that actually gets me a little emotional when he's like, "George is my best friend," and he hugs George at the end. Oh, it's such a silly movie, but that's such a sweet little earnest moment where, you know, y'all are like, oh, they're just misfits who are trying to get through the world together, much like Airheads. Again, just about misfits bonded together, trying to, you know, make something for themselves.
Right. Well, I mean, his character was kind of like thrown away sort of by the other Farnsworth or whatever, right? And Weird Al, like, as soon as he saw him, he's like, "Oh, why don't you come work for me?" You know what I'm saying?
Didn't even hesitate.
It's like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
And that was the thing. And the same thing about the person that, like, asked for money.
Yeah.
He's like, "Ask for some change." And he was like, "Well, here you go." And the guy gave him, like, money back.
Yeah.
That was, like, kind of weird, but it was like, it was just showing again, like, Farnsworth treated this guy like, you know, crap, and then like what Weird Al was like, "Oh yeah, here you go."
Just a nice person, and there's a real morality to the film that's just sweet, because that's kind of Weird Al's whole vibe. I mean, he's just kind of like a real kind of pleasant, nice person, and even in his music, I mean, his music is never overly violent or overly angry. It's just kind of this feel good, kind of happy world that he lives in. It's almost like being a children's TV show host all the time.
But he wasn't. He was bad at being a children's TV host. That was the weird part of it, too.
Oh, but I kind of love how his... That's one part I like about the movie is his, like, really bad version of the children's TV show host.
Yeah.
Where he plays, like... His name is Uncle Nutsy or something like that.
Oh, yeah. But he also played during that scene where he went to the bar or whatever, when he was, like, downtrodden and sullen.
Yeah.
You feel kind of weird because you're like, I've never seen Weird Al in a sad mood.
Yeah.
And he almost did an almost terrible job of it, you know, because he has to be like, I have to act sad and life beat me up.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you expect Weird Al just to be positive and upbeat.
Yeah, and fun and lighthearted and, you know, just like throw, caution to the wind and just whatever, you know? I mean, he wrote that song Dare to Be Stupid, you know?
Yeah, I love that song. I love most of Weird Al's music, actually.
Yeah.
But UHF, I mean, it's a silly, fun movie, but it is, it's like pouring smiles into your brain. I think I've used that phrase before, but it's so true. It's very true with the UHF. I mean, it's, you can't watch that movie openly and be in a bad mood. It'll put you in a good mood.
The only thing about it is that, I mean, it's blatantly obvious that it's like kind of a low budget of film. And it was, but it's supposed to be, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think it is. I mean, you're talking about a UHF station, right? You're also talking about like Weird Al, but you know, it is enjoyable. You have to just sort of forgive it. The mistakes are part of, or the thing about it that doesn't make it like perfect, or the flaws are what make it like so great.
Yeah. Well, when you have a movie that's about, you know, kind of low budget productions, the fact that it itself is a low budget production doesn't hurt it. It just feels like a commentary on itself.
Right.
You know, and it just, it becomes charming. Just like the characters in the film are charming. The shows they make are charming. The actual movie about that has that same kind of, you know, adorable Shaggy Dog quality.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what else was I going to say about it? Oh, this one also has a host of, like cameos, right? Yeah. So, and also the weird sort of connection, Fran Drescher is in this movie.
Oh, yeah. How could we forget Fran Drescher? And the great Billy Barty, he's in it, too. Yeah.
Right. But Fran Drescher was in Spinal Tap, and so was Michael McKean.
You're right. She was. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Victoria Jackson, another Saturday Night Live, you know, cast member, was also, like, in this movie. Yeah. They are main characters, okay?
Yeah.
So, but as far as, like, cameos... Dr. Demento,
yeah, who gave Weird Al his break, yeah,
right. I mean, this is a guy that Weird Al sort of idolized, right, and gave him a show. Emo Phillips,
when that scene's great, where Emo Phillips plays the woodshop guy who ends up cutting off his own thumb,
right.
It's a very dark joke, but man, is it funny,
right?
I've always liked Emo's weird delivery, you know,
right. And I mean, I thought Anthony Geary, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
He's just a perfectly typecast as like this hot-headed, you know, boss who just like you hate, you know? He plays this real sort of Trumpian
Anthony Geary is Philo, dude.
Philo.
Yeah, Philo's the mad scientist.
Oh, Philo.
You're thinking of Kevin McCarthy's R.J. Fletcher.
Yes, that's who I'm thinking about.
Who always makes me think of the bad guy in Caddyshack.
Yes,
but it's not. It's not Ted Knight. But
yes,
it always makes me think of Ted Knight.
No. Oh yeah. No, that was the other thing. They named him Philo because the guy who invented like TV's name is Philo Farnsworth or whatever. They named the other guy Farnsworth.
Yeah, that's a very Weird Al kind of joke there too.
Yes.
And I gotta say, Billy Barty's got the greatest character name in, you know, the great dwarf actor Billy Barty. His name is Noodles McIntosh. That is an amazing name.
I mean, where did they come up with this stuff? I don't even know where they came up with some of the other like shows too. It's like so weird how like all of them came up with this. The different TV shows where he's like Al Capone's like
glove box
or whatever. Right?
And he opens it up and he's like, "I knew it. Road maps."
Where Raul is like got a show about like the animal show, and yeah, it's like in his apartment.
Yeah, it's an Animal Planet show, but it's all animals in his apartment. Yeah,
he's like trying to like make dogs fly or something like that. He's like throwing them out the window.
Yeah. Did you know turtles are a natural suction cup? You know, that's such a very Weird Al kind of joke. You know.
Yeah, all of it's just like really, really zany, and I think it plays into, like I said, it's almost like Weird Al, like how he writes parodies for movies, right? Or not writes parodies. Weird Al writes parodies for songs. It's like the same sort of thing, but with like different TV shows.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You almost feel like, man, he should have been like an SNL cast member or something like that. Yeah. Like, has Weird Al even been on SNL?
You know, I'm sure he has. I'd have to Google it, but I want to say he's at least been on as a musical guest.
If not, we should start a campaign, and he can be both.
Yeah.
You know, he would probably have to have an album or something else to promote or something like that. But, I mean, we got Betty White on, SNL.
Well, at this point, you know, Al's an institution. Did you know Al is 60 years old? Doesn't look a day over like 45.
Wow.
And hopefully he'll probably outlive us all. But we need to appreciate Weird Al Moore because he's consistently since the early 80s been amazing and just a beacon of positivity and goofy happiness. And again, we're very pro Weird Al is what we're trying to say.
Oh, definitely. I listened to his albums and loved all of his, you know, even his original, you know, songs. Like I said, like I mentioned, Dare to Be Stupid and it's just a wonderful sort of collection and vignette. And I probably laughed harder in this movie than in Airheads.
Yeah.
You know, not because of the silly jokes in Airheads, but it's just like so weird and so wacky and so fun.
Yeah. And it's a barrage of just silliness the entire time.
Yeah.
Like there's every minute or so, there's at least one good joke. And it's UHF. I think it's more appreciated now than it was at the time it was released.
Right.
But it's a wonderful comedy, and it's a shame that it wasn't a bigger hit because there should have been like three or four Weird Al movies by now.
Yeah, and there's definite payoff to the main character for R.J. Fletcher. I mean, it just leaves you like so feeling good about the payback that, you know, Fletcher sort of gets.
He ends up getting arrested for illegal like activities and
he lost his FCC license.
Oh, yeah, he lost his FCC license. He gets kneed in the crotch by an old lady.
And then he founds out that like the dime
that he gave them,
that he gave is like is what put the other
Which put the other station over because the dime he gave to the homeless guy to be stingy turned out to be rare and was worth exactly the amount of money they needed to buy the station back, you know.
And the Rolex watch.
And the Rolex watch, yeah.
Hey, buddy!
Yeah.
That was such a great sort of character. It was great fun. I mean, so if you haven't seen it, maybe it's been a while since you've seen it. It's a wonderful revisit. It's there's only a couple parts I think that are like kind of dated, but I think it's just like, it's just so much like fun.
Yeah. There's a couple odd jokes about, you know, like they make fun of homosexuality a little bit and it's the 80s. You have to kind of look at it in the time it was made.
Right.
Great movie. I highly recommend it. And also if you're looking for a screen name for any online forums or websites, I highly recommend Noodles Macintosh.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Noodles Macintosh.
Yeah, why isn't that a million screen names is what I want to know. I mean,
or Stanley Spadowski is freaking awesome, too. I love that one. But yes, definitely worth watching again and again. So let's talk about the facts. Our wonderful, wonderful facts. I didn't really find out a whole lot about these movies. There was not really much to tell as I'm adjusting my microphone here. It's messing with me.
We're pulling back the curtain now, ladies and gentlemen.
See, behind the wall where all the magic is made. There isn't a whole lot of like sort of like odd stuff that we find. I found like most of like the just normal stuff. But let's go over some of the things that we mentioned. We mentioned the music of Airheads, song. But the credits in the intro is a song performed by Motorhead rapper Ice-T, Ugly Kid Joe founder. It's also on the soundtrack. This was a time where Ice-T was collaborating with other heavy metal and hardcore punk bands such as Slayer and Black Flag.
Yeah,
he kind of was his own, you know, artist. He did like original Gangster and did all these things. But then he started getting into like metal. Like he was with Slayer when they did the Judgment Night soundtrack.
Which that's what we probably should watch at some point. Judgment Night is a very underappreciated movie, but we're not going to digress. But
we're
going to make a note of that for later.
Yeah. Definitely. And then because that mix like rock, that whole soundtrack, like I love that soundtrack because it mixes like the rock bands, like these heavy rock and alternative and heavy metal bands with like hip hop artists.
Yeah. And that was probably 5 years before that became a trend.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
We already mentioned that Lemmy Kilmister. Is that how
Kilmister,
you pronounce it? Kilmister. I don't even know. The band Motorhead.
He's God, man. Come on, man.
He's Lemmy. I just know him as Lemmy, man.
Lemmy and his Cocoa Puffs, yeah.
He said he was a school yearbook editor in the parking lot. Yeah. He's credited in the movie as Lemmy Von Motorhead. So, Chaz, right? Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
He was originally supposed to be played by John Cusack.
I can sort of see it.
Well, luckily John turned down the movie.
Yeah, because Brendan Fraser's got kind of this. He's got more of an earnest, open quality than Cusack does. Cusack's kind of you know above it all, really.
I think he was a little too old almost for that time period in '94 to be playing this young, you know, band trying to make it on the strip in California, you know.
Yeah, I also can't see him with really long hair trying to be a metal guy. I can't see it. You know.
The building. So you mentioned Die Hard and like Michael Richard in the air shafts or whatever. The building where the radio station is at shares a parking lot with the one used as Nakatomi Plaza in Die Hard.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah, so it's like right next door, and you can kind of see there's like a scene like really early on when they first start showing up where you can kind of see the Nakatomi Plaza sort of.
I'll have to go back and look at that. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I know. I thought that was pretty awesome. Mm. And then this was the final film that 20th Century Fox used their like 1980s logo. Mm. Okay. So the new logo debuted in a movie called The Scout, like later that year, mm-hmm. also starring Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit odd history. See, this is the normal stuff that I find. Like, not really like, oh, this is earth-shattering. This was like, okay, that's cool. So Brendan and Amy Locane, who I said she is a dead ringer for Christina Applegate.
She looks very much like, well, she's very stereotypical, like 90s platinum blonde and rocker chick. That was very, very much a look at that time period.
Right. Well, I mean, she's like the inexpensive.
she's the Kmart Kelly Bundy is what he's trying to say. Yeah,
all right. So anyway, they were, Brendan and Amy were also love interest in the movie School Ties.
Oh, School Ties. I've not seen School Ties in forever. That, I remember that being a very great movie.
Right.
But yeah, I did not know that. That's cool. That's interesting.
This is the first film that starred Adam Sandler and Steve Buscemi. So this is the movie.
It started a beautiful friendship. Yeah.
It did. Yeah. I still just remember, like Steve Buscemi with his wonky eye.
Yeah.
And what was the movie that there? He plays the.
Trying to football. Think. Yeah, it's the longest yard
or whatever with Bobby.
Oh no, Bobby, you're thinking Boucher? Of Waterboy.
Waterboy.
Yeah. What I always think of is in Billy Madison.
Oh no, Billy Madison, is that the one where he plays the walleye guy?
No, he plays walleye guy in every movie he's in. Oh, Steve Buscemi. But
no, he was really walleye in. Where was the one where he got the inheritance or the?
Oh. Mr. Deeds. Yeah. But the point is, it started a beautiful friendship between these two oddballs.
Yeah.
They've done a lot of things together after this.
This movie was made with a budget of $11.2 million. Because remember, they had like helicopters,
I guess,
and they had the show, yeah. And they had like, they took a, you know,
yeah.
a lot of time in the studio or whatever. Box office? 5.8 million.
See, you wouldn't know it because everyone I know kind of thinks back fondly on Airheads. Movies you don't realize didn't do well at the time.
And it has a 21% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't know anyone who doesn't like Airheads. I honestly don't.
But that's just our generation.
Because we grew up with it, yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that though we have to like sort of look at is go, we love this movie because we grew up with it, but other people... Like, you know, that didn't grow up in that time period, that maybe were like too, like, you know, just born in the 90s, or maybe they're older, you know, that were, you know, born in the 60s, they may just think that it's
stupid. I'm sure Gene Siskel hated it.
I'm sure he did. I didn't even look up what they said about it. I mean, I just know that all the critics, like, sort of didn't like it. They thought it was dumb and stupid and predictable and all these things.
Yeah. Well, it is predictable, but that's okay. You know, it's not everything has to be, you know, a twisty, turny film or something that surprises you. This, to me, is the cinematic equivalent of eating, like, a chicken pot pie, it's comfort food. It's you know, I want to sit, I want to enjoy myself for an hour and a half, you know.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not, you know, it's just pleasant, and that's good enough
it's
sometimes.
It's not like cheap fast food, you know, whatever. It's like home sort of like comfort food, like mac and cheese or something.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's perfectly okay.
Right. For UHF, okay, here's some interesting things about UHF. Spatula City. We got spatulas, and that's all.
that's such a good joke. 'Cause it's subtle.
I love Spatula City so much, I bought the company. which was a takeoff of the Remington. But anyway, the Spatula City billboard. So the billboard that's in like the shot, right? And you kind of almost don't notice it because when they show like the clips like for UHF, it's like they shot it on video.
Yeah.
They didn't shoot it on film. They actually shot it with like a real camera that like a UHF, you know, and showed you the video. It was, but there's a billboard in the commercial. It was purchased by the production company and placed just for that one shot. So they used it for the ease of filming, like next to a highway. But this highway wasn't frequented by a lot of people. I mean, you got to remember, this was in, they filmed the movie in like near Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay.
So they, but people started seeing the sign and like getting off the exit going, where's Spatula City? I want to go to Spatula City. Yeah. I mean, they were getting like real attention. Yeah. And people had no idea it was like connected to the movie.
Yeah.
So eventually they started getting complaints and had to take it down. But I mean, can you imagine somebody's, oh, Spatula City, I can go there.
I can use a spatula.
Yeah, let's stop and find out where that is.
I wonder what my spatula options could be.
Like a whole store, just spatula. Okay, so, and I've got to also, I'll just tell you this. I'm going to kind of deviate from my thing.
Sure.
So I told you that I used to work in radio, right? So I worked in talk radio. I didn't talk at all, which is funny because we're doing a podcast now, but I was running the board behind the scenes.
Sure.
So all I did was just like, when you go to commercial, like I play the commercial. Or like if we did a live show, like I would answer the phone and like put people on hold and like yell in the person's ear, yeah, we got Bob on line two. Okay. All right, Bob, what you got? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So one of the things I used to do was the station that I work for, the talk station, carried Rush Limbaugh. Ew. You know where I'm going with this?
No, but go ahead.
So I don't know if this is very well known or not. This is why, because I know this, but I don't know if other people know this. So, yeah, I don't like Rush Limbaugh, you know, much myself either. But besides that, the way that commercials are set up for a satellite feed like Rush Limbaugh is that you have a commercial break, and that commercial break is split up into like two like parts. You have their ads that like the Rush Limbaugh network runs.
Uh-huh.
And so, and then you have your spot where you run it. So say that you have a 4-minute break. The first 2 minutes would be like their ads. And then the last 2 minutes would be like, you know, your local ads for like your local, you know,
Spatula City.
Right. I was going to say like Carlot or something like that. Like whatever ads that you sold, because that's how you made money off the Sally shows.
Sure.
You would sell the airtime, the local airtime that you had.
Yeah.
So during this time period, some stations would just go completely dead air. Okay.
Yeah.
Some satellite. So the satellite feed would just like play their 2 minutes and then just go dead air for 2 minutes and then like come back like right on time.
Yeah.
Some would play like public service announcements. So these were like free ads that you can run anytime you want. They were just like nonprofit, just like, you know, hey, please run our commercial to like save trees or recycle or, you know, whatever, you know, forest fires, you know, don't start a forest fire, whatever. Rush Limbaugh. So you can hear the satellite feed like from the board. So when I went to local, you can still hear the feed.
Mm.
And they played the Spatula City commercial, the audio from it.
Weird. Like you just in their studio?
Well, just on the satellite feed during the local airtime.
Hmm.
That was one of their filler like commercials. was for Spatula City.
That's so odd.
I don't even know if Weird Al knows or, like, you know, a lot of people even care. I don't even know if he cares.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd be flattered. He seemed like that'd be his response. Yeah, that's neat. Thank you. Yeah,
I mean, I guess, like, Rush just, like, I mean, and he's a very sort of, like, controlling guy. So, you know, this didn't come from his, like, producer or, like, somebody else. And it wasn't just, like, one time. It was, like, almost, like, every break they would run the Spatula City.
Yeah.
And I remember one time, like, something happened and, like, I didn't run a local spot. Like, maybe we didn't have any local shows. So I'm just like, well, I'll just let, you know, them fill the time. My boss did not like that.
Yeah.
He was like, why are we running Spatula City ads? That's from a stupid movie. I don't do a good
it's not,
boss.
Like, it's not stupid. Shut up.
But yes, I was told, do not run that Spatula City ad. So I just thought it was a weird bit of trivia that not a lot of people know.
Well, there you go, people. That's a video culture exclusive for you. Rush Limbaugh likes UHF.
He did. He must like it a lot.
And the movie is so good that it doesn't persuade me from liking it too. You know?
Oh, just because you know Rush Limbaugh likes it?
Yeah. So the movie is so good, that's not going to make me not like the fact that he likes it also.
No, we don't. I mean, comedy is comedy, man.
Yeah. We're not going to get political, but...
During a VH1 Behind the Music episode about Weird Al Yankovic, Emo Phillips shows an actual Screen Actors Guild residual check he earned for the film. It was for 30 cents. He stated proudly the check represented what being in the film did for his career. I'm Emo Phillips and I made 30 cents.
Yeah.
Okay, so the song Money for Nothing,
so
was Dire Straits' song.
Yes, it is.
Written by Mark Knopfler, who's a lead singer and lead guitar player of Dire Straits.
Wonderful band.
So that parody of the Billy Hillbillies.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Right. So when, you know, to do a parody song, you have to get permission from the songwriters.
Sure.
So when Weird Al approached Mark Knopfler and said, hey, can we do this song? He said, well, I'll do it as long as I get to play the guitar part.
Yeah, because why wouldn't he? I mean, a lot of guys are Weird Al fans.
I don't know if he was a fan or maybe he thought that, like, his guitar player couldn't play it right.
Yeah.
Or, like, he wanted it to be represented well.
I personally think he was a fan. That's what I like to believe. Because Al's band is tight.
Yeah.
He's had the same band his entire career, and those guys can play.
Right. Well, and... Mark Knopfler, I mean, you have to remember, I mean, he is a British guy.
Yeah.
I mean, they grew up with, like, Monty Python. Yeah. So they probably love that silly, you know, kind of stuff. So but he said, yes, as long as I can play. And, of course, what are you going to say? No? Come down. Please, come play the guitar lick
for us. Come hang out with us, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. As long as, you know, the only thing, they couldn't get Sting to sing the backup.
Yeah.
So Sting is on the original on the Money for Nothing. That's another bit of trivia about that song.
And there's reference to Sting and Airheads. They asked Chas to make a little speech at one point on the radio, and Steve Buscemi as Rex goes, you want to make a speech? What do you think he is? Sting?
That's so weird.
Yeah.
So the actual title of that song, too, is called Beverly Hillbillies / Money for Nothing.
So he's very open with where it came from,
Well... apparently, he wanted to call it, like, something else, or they couldn't just call it Beverly Hillbillies. So, they had to call it something else, and that's what the lawyers came up with. So, I don't know. Who knows? This movie is named VHF.
UHF.
Or VHF. This movie is named UHF. It was almost called The Vidiot.
That is a terrible name.
Weird Al came up with that name.
It's terrible.
The reason why is because he thought that UHF wouldn't have very much meaning, like, abroad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, UHF is, like, sort of a reference that Americans would get, but the rest of the world, they don't really know what that means.
That's fair, but the vidiot is terrible.
Well, Orion thought it was stupid, too, and they named it UHF. But in most foreign markets, the movie was called The Vidiot from VHF. So they kind of took Weird Al's advice, but then called it like something else. So, but interestingly, in Mexico, the movie was released as Los Telelocos, which directly translates to the TV crazies.
That's actually a pretty good name. Los Telelocos.
Telelocos. I've mentioned the Academy Motion has the statuette where he's covering his crotch. That wasn't because they wanted to put it in there. It's because the Academy wouldn't let him use a real one.
Sure, yeah.
One of the videos shows mentioned when they're coming up with a schedule is the Volcano Worshipers Hour. That's because Weird Al. So just to get into the yearbook, he started a club called the Volcano Worshipers. So that's a reference to that. The car that Weird Al drives is a 1956 Nash Metropolitan, just in case anybody wanted to know. As far as like cast, Jerry Seinfeld was offered the role of Bob, George Newman's best friend.
Huh.
But he turned it down.
Yeah, I can't picture Seinfeld in that.
No.
Yeah.
No, it just, yeah, that's just. And then Weird Al offered the role of Philo, you know, like the engineer guy.
Yeah.
He offered it to Crispin Glover.
Now that I could see, because Crispin Glover is an odd duck.
So, but Crispin Glover was only interested in playing the role of Crazy Eddie, the car salesman who says, "I'll club a seal to make a better deal." So Weird Al was like, "No,
yeah, so. Bless you, Crispin Glover. We are fans here, Crispin Glover. If you hear this, please reach out to us."
Yes, yes. Ellen DeGeneres and Jennifer Tilly auditioned for the role of Terry, which was played by Victoria Jackson.
I will not go into my deep thirstiness for Jennifer Tilly. I will leave that out of the podcast. But Jennifer Tilly, if you're listening to this, find me. I'm on social media. I think about you often.
But DeGeneres was the first choice, but for reasons unknown, that never happened. So I guess you must have turned down the role.
Yeah, she could have been good in it. She has that kind of every woman kind of quality about her. She would have been a good straight person.
I don't know. It just seems to me Weird Al must have like something for girls with like weird voices or something.
Well, he's definitely into broad humor. I mean, again, he's a Dr. Demento disciple.
Right.
So
but I'm just thinking of like Jennifer Tilly and Victoria Jackson.
That's true. Yeah.
Not really Ellen. But, after extremely positive feedback from test screenings, the struggling Orion Pictures concluded that this was going to be their summer, like, surefire blockbuster. I mean, people were laughing and they were like enjoying themselves. But it went up against Lethal Weapon 2, Batman, Indiana Jones, and The Last Crusade.
Yeah. No one saw anything that year but Batman and the Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
That's the movies I saw that year.
I saw those multiple times in the theater.
Yeah.
I don't remember UHF coming out in theater. I was at the movies a lot that summer.
Yeah, I don't remember it either. I think I remember seeing a poster.
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, I want to go see that. That looks fun.
Well, I'll just go see Batman for the fifth time. Yeah,
because, and if you don't know, like the cover or like the poster or whatever of VHF is like Weird Al.
UHF.
I keep calling it VHF.
You do, it's okay. But so it's poster is Weird Al.
It's Weird Al, and he's just got these crazy glasses and like a swirl of like TV.
Yeah. It's a cool poster, yeah.
Although, okay, so the budget was $5 million, and it made $6.5 million domestic.
So it barely.
But that's not even counting like, you know, they're going to exhibitors or, you know, theatrical gross or like whatever.
Yeah, so it still just didn't quite make enough money. Yeah.
No. And then following another string of box office flops in the late 80s, Orion went bankrupt in the early 1990s. So it was from the 90s. Yeah, there was more like kind of floppy movies. And
And what's funny is Orion, just in the past 2 years, has started to come back. They're starting to release movies again.
Are they really?
Someone bought the brand, yeah, and they're starting to use that brand. I don't know if it's anything related to the original Orion, but that logo is being used again for films.
Oh, that's great. I love the little O and the...
Yeah, yeah. Nostalgia, man. Nostalgia.
And, yeah, those and the Orion and the belt, and then they have the circle in the O's.
Yeah.
It has a 63% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a good movie.
So... I would think that it would have higher ratings. See, to be quite
me
honest.
Too. But you know, critics, and again, I can say that as some who is a film journalist, that critics can be snooty.
Yeah, the consensus from Rotten Tomatoes is, and I'm quoting directly from RottenTomatoes.com, UHF is bizarre, freewheeling, and spotty, though it is anarchic spirit cannot be denied.
That's a beautiful encapsulation of what the movie is. That's actually, I couldn't have wrote anything better to explain it. That's a wonderful explanation.
I agree. Roger Ebert hated it. He gave it 1 star. And he said, I did not record a single laugh during the running of the film. It was routine, predictable, and dumb. Real dumb.
Well,
I mean, I have to admit, there are some, like, you know, sort of like dumber and dumbish. You know, this was before Dumb and Dumber, but yeah. It is really it's that type of comedy.
It's got some lowbrow humor in it, yeah. Yes.
It is really that type of humor, right?
Yeah, but how can you not laugh at the kid drinking from the fire hose? Is Roger Ebert made of stone?
He is not a fan of Weird Al.
Well, it's a different generation. Different generation.
Yeah, different guy, different.
Yeah.
All right. But either which way, it doesn't really matter. I mean, yeah. You're not going to like everything. So, like I said, I mean, I mean, to me, I think it has some flaws. But, you know, you have to go into it going, you know, hey, this is, you know, this is what you're going to get. You know what I'm saying?
And to me, this kind of film, the flaws are part of what make it charming.
Right.
You know, what make it enjoyable and what make it memorable.
Right.
I really like both these films, and I really enjoyed the research for this week's episode.
All right, great. So what recommendations would you have for somebody for these, any of these two movies?
I'm going to recommend a third film to go along with the trilogy of these two films. So there's a style trilogy. I think there's a certain, you know, stylistic things in these films. I'm going to recommend a third film starring John Cusack.
All right.
And Tim Robbins, called Tapeheads.
Oh, yeah.
And it's about two guys who basically work at a lo-fi music television station. And it's one of the early kind of, you know, examples of music videos infecting film. Uh-huh. It's very weird. It's very much an anarchy type movie, sort of. Uh-huh. A little bit like UHF. It's bizarre and strange. Uh-huh. But it's a movie that doesn't get talked about a lot. And it would fit in very, very well as like the in-between film between Airheads and UHF.
I've forgotten about that movie.
Yeah, and it's called Tapehead, starring John Cusack and Tim Robbins. I think it would fit in really well in a nice, you know, triple feature of lo-fi broadcasting.
I have a recommendation too, and the only reason that I even jump in because I know
hit me
because this is a movie that you haven't seen. A movie called FM.
FM, I've not.
So this movie was done kind of like in the early 80s, and it kind of, it's kind of a more serious. It's, you know, like those movies at the time, like it kind of has some comedic moments, but it's more about like the radio station and the FM radio station, the rock or, you know, pop, you know, FM radio station where, sort of a similar thing happens, just like in UHF and just like in Airheads, where the crowd of people has to come save the station.
Yes.
So it's a little more serious, but it's definitely more. Tom Petty plays a cameo.
Nice.
Linda Ronstadt plays a cameo. Jimmy Buffett plays a cameo. Like they play themselves. Yeah. I mean, there's like, you know, because they broadcast like a live concert and stuff, and but the whole plot is like the station manager is trying to save the station from like army ads or trying to recruit for the army. Mm. And so that becomes like kind of his Achilles heel. I think it's a great, it's really almost a precursor to WKRP.
Okay.
But it wasn't the creators of WKRP and the creators of this movie were completely different. It's just that they both sort of came up with a very similar concept at the same time. And the WKRP actually came out after FM, but they were already working on development when the FM came out.
Oh, okay, interesting. I will look for that. I've never heard of it.
It's a wonderful. We should do both those movies at some point.
Maybe we'll do Tapeheads and FM at some point, and this will be like, you know, that'll be the sister episode of this movie.
Yeah, sounds great.
Or this episode, yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, but yeah, I really enjoyed these this week, Ryan. I think they were great recommendations.
Yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun. You know, we always learn everything about, you know, life and living life and making movies. And it's just, these are both wonderful films to go back and revisit. I highly recommend them.
Sometimes you just got to kick back, have a laugh, and, you know, enjoy yourself. And that's what these movies are great for.
That's it.
And, you know, that's why I think this podcast is for, my friend. You know, I've had a good time today talking about these, and I look forward to next week.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know how you, what you thought of the movies, whether you loved it or hated it, or any other suggestions or anything that you might have caught that we didn't. So, but thanks very much. You guys have a wonderful time.
And yeah, guys, go watch some movies.
Listen, let's get one thing straight. Guns don't kill people. I do.
Channel 62 has the lowest ratings in the history of television. What they need is a new station manager.
No, not him. Forget it. No way.
A man of action. A man of courage. A man of vision.
What's your name?
Billy.
Billy what?
What they get is a man so desperate, he'll put anyone on the air.
Hey, Stanley.
Yeah, George?
How would you like your own TV show?
Okay.
You get to drink from the fire hose!
Okay, you ready?
Yeah!
Open wide!
He's Conan the Librarian.
Today we're teaching poodles how to fly.
We beat out the networks.
George Newman. He starts where the others stop.
We're the number one station in town.
Orion Pictures presents Weird Al Yankovic in UHF, the movie.